We're back at the races, 15 minutes into hour two. And as we discussed yesterday with Nick Luck, and as I discussed right at the start of the show yesterday, certainly not the ideal result in the Grand National when a horse like Wicklow Brave is claimed. But as everybody in the game, and certainly those that send horses over the jumps understand, you go forward, and Brain Power continued on and really seemed to be gaining the advantage into the last jump. And under Nico de Boinville, powers to the Grand National win for Nicky Henderson. Third try for Henderson at Far Hills after Hunt Ball and Days of Heaven in 15 and 16. Nicky Henderson joins us. Congratulations, Nicky.
Thank you very much. It was a great race to watch. I'm sorry I wasn't there and couldn't be with you all, because I hear it was tremendous. A great day. As you rightly say, the only thing it was tinged with terrible sadness was Wicklow Brave, who's been a great horse over the years, and it did take the gloss off the race. But my team thoroughly enjoyed themselves and said it was fantastic.
They put on as brave a face as you can, and it always tempers things, Nicky, when at any level. It doesn't have to be something as big as an American Grand National or any stake.
That's right.
It takes away, at least initially, but in the aftermath, you really have to be delighted with Brain Power and the season that he put together.
Well, it was. It was, as you can guess. I mean, you don't just suddenly decide to run a race like this overnight. So it was a plan that we hatched quite way back at the end of our national hunt season in the spring. And, we decided that that's what we'd do. So we only gave him a very short break and brought him back to get him ready for this. And as I say, it was a plan, and when these sort of things work, it's obviously very satisfying. Michael Buckley's a great supporter of national hunt racing and has been for a long time. He likes American racing. As you know, he had Toast of New York, and before that, he owned half of Grand Canyon. If you're old enough like me, I remember it well, but it was a long time ago when he came over and won the Breeders' Cup chase?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's tremendous. And, when you say you get out in front of the plan, he had competed at Cheltenham in the spring, but, really the two races earlier in the year basically didn't go to plan. He had last won in December, the Unibet at Cheltenham. But how do you prepare a horse for a pretty testing course at Far Hills, as I'm sure you came to know with your prior tries?
Well, I know. I mean, the interesting thing is that is as far as he ever raced in his life. He's never been, that is 2 mile, 5 furlongs, we would call it anyway. I don't know how you measure it. Well, he's only ever been, in the past, he's only ever been 2 mile two, 2 1/4. So it was quite a bit further than he'd ever been before, and that was a concern. But he does love fast ground. And so the first thing was to, I think you'd always be pretty confident at Far Hills at this time of the year, you'll get fast ground. He's good here in the autumn. And then sort of little things get at him as the season goes on, and he'd run two disappointing races at the end of last season when the ground was soft, but he is running in the best races. But he is a top-class horse, and we've had enormous fun with him all over the years. But we set about that. We only gave him a short break. Our biggest problem, to be honest with you, was getting him ready in sort of August, September time, when all our good horses are still not ready at all. And consequently, I had very, very little to work him with. And we did take him to Kempton Park Racecourse, which is an all-weather track, and galloped him there. But he had to do it on his own because I'd nothing else that was ready to go and work with him. So it tested us a bit to get him ready without either a race or even a competitive racecourse gallop because, as I say, our good horses are only just coming into work now.
And a fair point. And one of the things that I happened to have caught on to, Nico on Twitter had sent out a blog, a link to his blog post, and he talked about the two workouts, that he was pretty impressed with the way Brain Power was coming into the race. And that kind of alerted me to his potential here. If there was going to be an upsetter of Wicklow Brave, it felt like Brain Power was the horse.
Well, the other interesting thing, you're right. I mean, he had been in good form at home. I was happy, and his weight was good, and he was giving us all the right vibes. I think from there on, actually, he traveled very well, and he didn't have any after effects of that. He went down to Leslie Young's, which is great. We've been there before. Jack Finn, who's one of my traveling lads, who was with him, just every day was telling me how well he felt, and they actually kept him in the field day and night. He lived in the field all the time he was there. And Leslie is great, and she's a tremendous help. We've done the two times we've been before, she's helped us and looked after the horses. And, you know, he had a nice week down there just to sort of get himself ready. Turned out, and he's come back. And, I mean, yes, he's lost a fair bit of weight, but you'd expect that after the race and the journey back. He got home at lunchtime yesterday. So he was back nice and quickly, and he's back out in the field today, and it's a lovely sunny day.
Well, and I do want to get more from you about Nico de Bonville. I brought him up with Nick Luck yesterday, and Nick was very much identified him as having reached elite status, and he's become your go-to.
Well, he has. I mean, over the years, Mick Fitzgerald, and then Barry Geraghty, and then when Barry was sort of, he went back to Ireland to ride for JP McManus. And Nick has been with me a long time. He started here, having never ridden a winner of any description. And he actually was best known in the early days because he always rode Sprinter Sacra, who was our sort of best horse then. He rode him at home all the time. And then sort of when Barry retired, it was the obvious thing was for Nico to ride him. Well, Barry didn't retire, but he was then retained by JP full-time. And, you know, we had no hesitation in putting Nico on him. And, you know, with Sprinter Sacra and then Altior has been our sort of recent sort of hero who's just won 19 out of 19. He's unbeaten. And the champion chase of the last 2 years. So, you know, Nico's, you know, he said that he's very, very good in big races as much as he is, which is very important on the little days. It's very important just to keep ticking away. But he works well under pressure.
Well, certainly on Saturday the win with Brain Power, and for you it was a landmark day as well for Willie Mullins, who got his first North American victory earlier in the day.
Well, it was for Willie, and he's a very, very good mate of ours, and you know, we all felt desperately sorry for them. I mean, and you know, no words can sort of ever reflect what happened and how much it hurts, because we all know what it's like. We've all been through it. And as you rightly said beforehand, I'm afraid you have to go into this game with your eyes open, because, I mean, horses, to be fair, get that, you know, there are sadly injuries on the flat as well as there are jumping, but jumping obviously puts that extra little bit of pressure on them, and falls are inevitable, but you just hope they're not, you know, that don't result in injuries, let alone fatal injuries. But we're aware of that, and we have to be strong. And you know, these horses do it because they love doing it, to be honest with you. And they really do enjoy it. And we ask them a question, and they give us a lot of answers, and they're very brave. And we have to be brave at times, too.
Well said. Nikki, I got to mention, too, that it really, as a fan of jump racing in general, it was going to be a special day, you know, when we get to open up the PPs and have you and Gordon Elliott and Willie Mullins participating in North America. And, you know, next year it'll be the 100th meeting of Far Hills, and Guy Torsiglieri and his team are so looking forward to it. Give us a moment thought about, you know, coming to the U.S. with horses and pointing for races like this.
Well, I've just, Michael Buckley, he's not back yet. I don't think he's just still celebrating, but he's up in New York, and I think he's doing some business. But he said, right, next year you've got to promise that you will come. Trouble is, we're just starting to get very busy over here. It wasn't I didn't have confidence, but just to come over for one night, which is sadly all it would be, and then fly back again and sort of crumple under jet lag and have to keep going. It just didn't seem necessary. But he's made me promise if we do it again that I will come. So,
well, I hope
and
so.
As you say, if you keep putting on prize money like that, I'm afraid we'll keep coming.
And that's money. Horses follow money, as they say.
Well, we have to. I mean, no, that's why it's so tempting. We've been over in the past, and you know, to be fair, we've had some wonderful times racing in America. When you'll probably remember the late great George Sloan, who was an enormous friend of mine, who was actually my brother-in-law, and we used to go down to Nashville and all around there and bring horses over for that Sport of Kings Challenge and that. So I have a lot of friends over there, and it would have been lovely to have been with them last weekend. But we will try and come again one day.
Well, and I look forward to it. I look forward to having you on again, and continued success. We'll look for brain power, I suppose, toward Cheltenham in the spring.
Well, he'll probably go back there in November, and then we'll give him a break. And see what we do in the spring, and then sort of maybe head back to your way, you know, in the fall.
Nice. I love it. Nikki Henderson, a real pleasure to have you on. I thank you so much for this.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Nikki Henderson, who is like Willie Mullins and like Gordon Elliott, an absolute elite British jump trainer. The official number, by the way, 5-time training champion. And so much fun to have him. And stoic about the situation. I mean, to be quite honest, it felt like brain power had kind of had the measure at that point. You can't speculate, but it felt like he had the upper hand coming to that last fence. A real honor to have Nikki Henderson join us. We'll take a break here. Bottom of the hour exactly coming up, and Marcus Hirsch to join us. We'll get Marcus's pre-Breeders' Cup entry announcement for the Juvenile Turf and the Mile, his two categories coverage. Marcus Hirsch next, then Bill Downs will join us from Indiana, John White, and Jeremy Plonk. Second half at the races continues after this.
The latest racing news. It's at the races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions 3 straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Play the Empire 6 at Belmont Park featuring daily payouts and a carryover jackpot. Best of all, it only takes 20 cents to take down the Empire. One unique winning ticket earns the entire net pool plus the jackpot carryover. Without a unique ticket, 75% is distributed to winners with 25% added to the jackpot. The Empire 6 consists of the final six races each race day at Belmont Park, and the next jackpot carryover mandatory payout is Sunday, October 27th. Learn more at nyra.com/Empire6. The Empire 6, play small and win big.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the sun on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9000.
938-4643. Destination unknown. Now, back to At the Races with Steve Pick on Sirius XM Radio.
Well, Marcus Hirsch joining us, following his colleague, Brad Free, with the reports on the categories that he covers for Breeders' Cup. And pre-entries continue to be sifted and put together, and particularly for the juvenile turf, undoubtedly, which always seems to oversubscribe, the three juvenile turf races, fillies, the boys, and the sprint get heavy. And the mile tends to oversubscribe typically as well. Marcus Hirsch, good morning.
Hello, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. Excellent. Looking forward to tomorrow and getting the fields, the pre-entry fields. And you've been tracking prospective fields and wanted to get the report in advance. We'll start with the mile.
Okay. What would you like to know?
Well, let's get the some of the big storylines established, and one of the most interesting was the slow, steady turn that Chad Brown made with bricks and mortar, at least we assume, is making. And, of course, Dave Groening has been tracking things.
Dave, he's definitely reported that Brown is leaning toward the turf over a mile and a half with bricks and mortar, which is absolutely right. That is a change. I think when this whole process began, if he had acceded to a demand for which way you're leaning, Mr. Brown would have said mile with his horse, but that has shifted over time. So the anticipation is he will be cross-entered in both races, but the plan is tentatively, I think, to run in the mile. I mean, in the turf, excuse me. So, yeah, that's a big name that's out of that for sure. I think that leaves, it's a little bit of a hole, but, I mean, one reason that, you know, that could have contributed to Team Brown's thinking was the way Uni ran in the First Lady at England so well that she was supplemented to the Breeders' Cup Mile. We know that she's an intended participant, Uni, who shipped to California and run well before she won a Grade One race there at the end of last year. So that she in fact, I would say that the two most exciting American prospects are both females in Unina, who is a mare, and Dot Stormy, the four-year-old filly, who was second in the Woodbine Mile after thumping Unina and several others in the four-star David Saratoga, a performance that may have gotten a little bit lost in the shuffle of the last couple of months.
No doubt. And this is certainly a race that historically we've seen no shortage of not just great performances, but some all-time great fillies and mares that have won this. Yeah, I mean, it fits.
Yeah, no, I mean, Goldakova really stands out. I mean, I just feel like I got lucky. This is a race I've been assigned to cover for a long time, so I got to, you know, write a lot and see a lot of Goldakova and Wise Dan, not a filly, obviously, but, and then Tipton was so excellent at Keeneland 2015. I don't think there's any question that either one of those fillies could win this race. In fact, I'm high on both of them. I mean, the overseas horses, David O'Meara has already said he wants to try to get two of his in. Lord Withers, who just ran mid-pack on Saturday in the QE2, didn't run his best race, but he won the Queen Anne, so that's a win and you're in. He's got a spot in the field, and he would also like to run Soudois, who was fourth at Del Mar, I want to say, in 2017, and was slightly compromised third in the Shadwell Turf Mile last time. If he can get in, this race is expected to be oversubscribed. If Soudois can get in, O'Meara would run him well. And it's important to note that, Lord Glitters didn't make much of an impact at Woodbine in 2018 in the Woodbine Mile, but he had a difficult shipping experience and the pace was super slow, leaving him no chance. He made better through the American racing than that. And O'Meara, you know, has done really well with all the horses he's shipped here, starting with Mondo Elite, I guess, would be the first one. Even Soudois ran a good race. And I also think that it's fair to assume that that Aidan O'Brien will have Circus Maximus in this race, the winner of Prix du Moulin de Longchamp in his most recent, which was way back on September 8th. He has not raced since, which is a little bit unusual because those horses often are campaigned quite aggressively. But he also won the St. James's Palace Stakes at Royal Ascot, and his unsuccessful ventures have been in races. He thought he might be a Derby horse in a year, and he didn't do that well at Longchamp. But in a mile, he's good. I just don't think. I mean, to me, the European mile division has not been especially strong for a couple of years now, and this year was probably no exception. There's been some attrition in those ranks. And whoever ends up in field from overseas is probably going to be just fine, but nothing spectacular. And I think that American horses are going to have a decent chance this year.
Since we dove a little bit into the international set, what about Romanized from KJ Condon?
I believe that Romanized participation was mooted. I don't know. I can't say for sure, but the last comments I read from the trainer were more along the lines of, we're going to skip Champions Day, British Champions Day last weekend because he's not a off-ground horse and he wouldn't want that. But also, we might just put him away for the year and bring him back next year. That was the last thing I read. Not especially encouraging. I know he'd been on some lists for a long time, but we'll just have to see when those come out if he indeed participates. And of course, he was involved in a controversial finish in the Prix de Moulins where Circus Maximus drifted out. You know, I watched that race again last night. He drifted out a long way. He drifted out six or seven paths and probably did compromise, Romanize the seat in the nose. There was no change of order. But anyway, I don't think there are going to be any, like, super major surprises as far as overseas horses, and certainly not on, like, oh, wow, this really good horse is running, because there, I don't see those horses. I know another horse that has been solidly mentioned all along and I expect to be a participant is Joseph O'Brien, Philly Iridesa, who has run some really good races this year, too, and is, she's kind of some distance versatility. She's won group one in a mile and a mile and a quarter this year, so I suspect she would be cross-centered in the mile and the filly in marriage for her.
I asked Nick Luck yesterday, and Nick personally, he said either was, you know, either or, but he thought that she would maybe, given Santa Anita, that she might be better off trying the filly and mare turf next Saturday, but that was just his opinion.
Right. Yeah, I mean, she finished off the she finished off pretty poly stakes over a mile and a quarter pretty well. Magic Wand was like ran one of her better races in that race. I thought she beat her by 2 1/4 lengths. That's pretty high level form over a mile and a quarter. Right-handed. That was pretty good ground. I mean, it wasn't as fast. I wouldn't expect nearly as Santa Anita would be, but she also run well over pretty, you know, fast ground at Leopardstown going left-handed. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess you run into Sister Charlie in the filly and mare turf, which is maybe a single more formidable foe than any one horse in a mile. But you know, with a big field in the mile, it often comes down to, you know, a lot of luck too. So you just don't really know how that's gonna play out. And I don't know that there's one horse to fear in that race like you might with Sister Charlie.
Another name internationally before we talk about the domestic players. Charlie Appleby, Line of Duty, who would also be coming out of the Moulin.
Yeah, I know he's been, there's been a steady drumbeat with him about participating and having come last year to Churchill Downs and won the juvenile turf. You know, it makes sense. He's traveled here before and done well. He is probably a half cut below the very best milers in Europe this year, if I had to guess. What I've noticed about him doing some research the last couple of days is that horse is as honest as any horse that I remember seeing recently. He tries so hard, and he has kept the margin somewhat manageable at the finish because he just keeps running and running and chugging along till the very end, even when he's beaten. And he's closed some very late ground in his last couple of races, just that he doesn't have quite the athleticism or turn of foot that some of the other horses have, nor does he have the positional speed of a horse like Circus Maximus. But, you know, he having come here before and run well on a flat, you know, kind of tighter turn, left-handed horse, that's an advantage. And he is the kind of horse who could, I think he'll be fine on fast, on really firm kind of fast turf. And he will sit back and make one run. And he's the kind of horse that I think could really pick up some pieces in a race like the Breeders' Cup Mile, if indeed he participates.
To the domestic and to the North American players, and you know, some of the some of the challenge winners, horses like Bowie's Hero, El Tormenta, Bolo, absolutely Bolo, El Tormenta for Gail Cox, who. You know, everybody that cashed knew about the bad trips leading up to the Woodbine Mile. And El Tormenta's kind of been out of sight and out of mind. I probably comes into this race a little under the radar, no?
I think so. I mean, yeah, he did have some tough trips. But He shouldn't have been whatever he was with my 47-1. He probably wasn't more like a natural 25-1 shot, but that was a big step up for him. I was a little concerned about the horse because it took him a while to work back, and after he worked, he didn't work again for like 12 days or something. But I was able to contact Gail Cox, who I never spoke to before, and seems like a very sharp person, and I enjoyed speaking with her. She said that everything had been fine all along. He was plenty fit, didn't need to do a lot of work, so she put him on a lighter work schedule anyway. By design. So he has apparently done well since that race. He's somewhat unexposed. I'm going to maintain a bit of skepticism about him, I have to say, going into the Breeders' Cup, just because he stepped up and ran easily the best race of his life, did it one time on home course. And now he's out on the road in a deeper spot. But look, he's fine, and he's got plenty of upside. He never want to try to talk people off a big long shot, and he probably will be just winning the Woodbine Mile. He's got to have to be 25 or 30-1 in this race, I would imagine. Buie's Hero, as you mentioned, he earned a spot in the field, winning the Chatfield Turf Mile. Really nice job by trainer Phil D'Amato. I thought the horse just kind of went nowhere last year after being really promising in 2017. He had an abbreviated 2018 campaign, didn't sell much, just kind of flat, but he came back and made the progress this year at age 5 that you might have thought he'd make at age 4. I think he's very solid, really ran a professional race in the Shadwell Turf Mile, shift and won, handled a different kind of turf course. His previous race, he just had a terrible trip at Del Mar, the Del Mar Mile. So that's kind of he might have won that with a better trip as well. But you still wonder. I think that he's pretty maxed out, and is his maximum good enough to win this race? Kind of marginal, but he's got the he's the right price. He's at home, and he's just a solid horse right now.
How about there's others obviously. You mentioned Bolo, but before we do that, is D'Amato going to try to get Prince Earl in?
I don't know for sure. I know there were several horses coming out of the City of Hope Mile, which was a blanket finish, and I don't think it was an especially hot race for a race like the Breeders' Cup Mile. I don't know if some people are going to get realistic at the very end when push comes to shove, but I know a lot of people, including Prince Earl Camp, were looking hard at the Breeders' Cup Mile. They're at home, and you could convince yourself that your horse fit because they were closing in. True Valor posted upset there. Prince Earl ran fine. He was kind of emergent earlier in the year, but the barn already, they have a in-your-in horse. We'll see if they want to run too. There are going to be other opportunities. What is it? The Citation comes up pretty soon. Maybe Living Totally in the past. But I know there's a mile and a 16th graded stakes race on the calendar that horse might fit too if they wanted to take an alternate route.
Well, Bolo, as you said, the early season shocker.
So in and out. He's been through a lot, and he's older. I think back in the day when he was at his very peak and was still very in and out, would run a huge race and then not show up at all. I think his top race from that era would actually have been competitive in this race. But I have a hard time imagining him even rising. If he runs one of his best races, him rising to the level of being in the top three in the race like this.
Couple of others that are on the possibles, horses like Caribou Club and Catapult. You mentioned True Valor, Simon Callahan, Val
yeah.
Brinkerhoff, Restrained Vengeance. These are all kind of nibblers that
marginal players. We'll see if they get in. It's gonna overfill, and there are going to be some exclusions. I believe the committee, the panel, 7 choices in the end. You got the Breeders' Cup Challenge winners, and get up to 7 horses in on points. And then after that, there's a selection committee, and I don't know. I think there's going to be some tough choices at this race because there are a lot of horses that are similarly marginal to me. But it's hard for me to imagine that any of those types will be more than bit players in a race with some pretty heavy hitters.
Marcus, anything to be gleaned from the history of this race at Santa Anita, and to give everybody a quick thumbnail, the last time we were at Santa Anita, Tourist, the winner with Rosario behind ahead of Tepin, trying to win it a second time in a row.
Tepin ran great, yeah.
Yeah. Then we go back to the monumental upset from the 14 hole, Caracanti.
It wasn't that monumental, and please never mention that again to me.
Okay.
That was a life lesson in not playing horses just because of a post when they're a price, because I really liked that horse. He'd had a terrible trip in his last race and was perfectly qualified. Anyway, yeah. He won from 14, and I think he's representative of a general trend that people have to consider, in that the people, you know, the horsemen sending horses to this race know what they're getting into. They send horses that are supposed to love this kind of going, you know, that really want to go fast most of the time. There are some exceptions, like Olympic Glory comes to mind, but usually, Europeans that are there because they're confident on fast ground horses that are really going to suit the conditions. And you know, a guy like Aidan O'Brien truly know which one of his horses, you know, would be suitable for that and going to travel well enough to stay in the race. Keep up. It's important to note also that the pace in this race at Santa Anita is usually very, very strong. I mean, more often than not, they're going to be traveling at a really good clip. You know, if you get a European horse that's a bad gait horse and lacks any semblance of positional speed, and they can be out the back door before you know it. So a horse like Circus Maximus, you know, he travels really strongly and can stay within shouting distance of pretty much any pace. So the European horses, they are generally going, you can expect that they're going to suit the conditions if they travel well and if they're good enough.
Well, the previous before Caracanti, Wise Dan, of course, the 2 years in a row, the 2012 and 2013, and those were so special with Mr. Fink and his wife, and Charlie Lopresti.
Yeah, you had a local horse obviously ran a big race and lead one of those years. Let me think. I don't have all the stuff right in front of me. I mean, it's been despite the fact that it's a big field and it's a race where you got to have a lot of luck or a great horse, you got to go back to Court Vision, I think, at Churchill to find what I would consider an implausible winner. I mean, I didn't think Caracanti was implausible at all. It's good that they go fast usually in these races, because I know we're all a little bit tired of seeing fast-paced races, turf races in North America, and it's really nice when they go at a good clip and the field gets strung out a little, and you know, everyone has a fair shake at it if they can avoid trouble.
You know, one thing that we didn't know it at the time, but in retrospect, you look at Wise Dan's win in 2013, Marcus, Za Approval second. And should Wise Dan have not participated or, you know, faltered for some reason, it would have meant that one mare would have produced three Breeders' Cup mile winners, because Mies Approval, Za Approval, and World Approval. It's unbelievable, actually, when you see them, and seeing his name is what sort of popped at me, that it's so implausible to think about.
It is remarkable. I wrote a whole story about that day before Approval won the Breeders' Cup bio, and I hadn't even thought about that, with Approval being second. Of course, he was never going to be Wise Dan at that day, but he was a good horse and ran a good race that day. Animal Kingdom, you know, got in enough trouble that some people make a case he might have had a chance at Wise Dan the other year that he won out there had he done the cleaner run of things.
Well, and you bring up Court Vision, and that's my anguished beat, and people might not realize that if Tour Allure wins that photo, Charlie Lopresti will have won three straight as a trainer of a mile, equaling Freddie Head.
Yeah, I completely forgotten that Tour Allure was on the wrong end of that photo.
Please.
And You hit me with Terracotta, so
okay, it's fair.
I will say that you know, I don't want to. I mean, Churchill is where it is, and Cleveland is where it is, and the Breeders' Cup there can be fine. But I'm really looking forward to getting this race back on a California turf course, you know, especially Santa Anita. I think that it's been a really good grass course for the Breeders' Cup last year. You know, it's just going to the course of the season. The turf was in really tricky shape. There was a big outside bias. The rail was, you know, wet and dead, and it changed the character of the races. A lot of horses didn't handle it. You're going to have just far fewer variables regarding the course itself this year than we did a year ago.
Well, we mentioned the two Wise Dan wins. You go back to 2008 and 9 for Goldakova for her first and second. Six Perfections, one of Flaxman's many successes in the Breeders' Cup. That was 2003. And my first time ever at Santa Anita, and whether Breeders' Cup or no Breeders' Cup, I got to see Lore win his second. And that was,
oh, my.
Yeah, that was tremendous. And Last Tycoon going all the way back to 86.
I don't think I was even born then, Steve. That's the old man.
Yes. I much like I lead the parade, you know. First me on the 20th, then Marty on the 21st, then Jay Pridman on December 7th. We all turned 60.
I did not know that. Congratulations in advance. 60 is the new 40, I hear.
I think Marty even suggested the new 30. Marty, but that's Marty.
Nice.
It's going to be the mile's always been one of my most the races
too.
I look forward to the most. It's
me
the greatest,
too. And I am again this year. I mean, I'm really interested in both of those fillies, Got Stormy and Uni. I mean, they both have a wicked, wicked turn, but I think they're the one this year for me.
That'd be fine with me. I got Stormy. I was on board this summer at Saratoga, and she just looked like a rocket ship ready to take
she
off.
She was spectacular. And if she runs back to that, she'll win.
Yeah, she's. I'm sure that I'll end up kind of leaning that way just because of the affection that was born over the summer. And let's turn our attention to your juvenile race, Marcus, and get an overview when it comes to the juvenile turf. This, you know, always fun. And it's O'Brien. I think you have to start with O'Brien here, don't you?
Yeah, he's won the race. I should know this. He's won like a third of them, four out of 12 or something.
Yeah.
He's the guy for this race. And yes, he has, I know, he's been toying with several horses. The one that I feel fairly confident will participate, is Arizona, who was second in the grade one Dewhurst, I guess 2 weekends ago now, second to Pinatubo, Europe's, well, Earthlight for Godolphin is an excellent sprinter. He won the Little Park 6 furlongs. He's like the top horse. And then 6 and beyond, Pinatubo has been a standout also for Godolphin. And Arizona was second to him, beaten only 2 lengths after losing 9 to him in the National Stakes in Ireland previously. And that form for Arizona could make him favored in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf. I would think he might be favored. He hasn't run. I mean, that was the best race he's run, but he's also only been out to 7 furlongs twice. He led in the Dewhurst, showed fight when Pinatubo challenged him, and would be expected. I believe he's a no-name never. I believe you'd think he'd get a mile at Santa Anita. And he'll be the supposed A-team for O'Brien if he indeed runs. And he's a formidable presence. I know that they also have Breeders' Cup winning your in horse in Royal Dornock, won Royal Lodge. I'm sorry, Grand Dornock, who won Royal Lodge. He had been Sorry, it is Royal Barnock.
It's Royal.
I get this. Yeah, okay. He had been mentioned for the Vertem Futurity at Doncaster, which is this weekend. And Brian is like 11 of the 12 horses that are the final entry stage for that race. So I don't know exactly what's going to happen there. But he's won over a mile. He hasn't run against the competition that Arizona has. So Arizona would be number one if the horse comes Royal Barnock. He could be a sneaky choice to be like maybe better suited to this particular race. He doesn't hit the same form as another horse. But what really was shocking to me was, and I don't know if it's changed or not for sure, but the fact that there were no other, only O'Brien was considering sending a horse, last I heard, for this race, and that's very unusual. Typically, you'll see several different Europeans from different outfits coming to these races, even California, and for whatever reason, that just doesn't seem to have been the case this year. We'll see if it changes at the last minute, but up to, a few days ago, that was the situation that was outlined to me.
Well, and certainly, I think Charlie Appleby's won this twice, I believe, right? Outstrip and Line of Duty.
Correct. Yeah, and they like to participate, and they have a bunch of 2-year-olds this
year.
Yeah, maybe something will pop up at the last second. As far as I last knew, they weren't pointing anything this way, which I didn't really understand. But maybe they just didn't feel like they had a horse that, like Pinatubo, he's good. His profile is for put him away. Wait for the 2,000 guineas in May, and Earthlight, I guess he would be maybe considered too good for the juvenile turf sprint, and they wouldn't want to run a mile. But then, and they're among their second tier, I thought might find something, but that doesn't seem to be happening.
Well, and let me bring this up too, because it's a little odd. I mean, Wesley Ward, all of his juvenile intentions, it seems, are targeting only the sprint, the juvenile sprint. I don't see any fillies or colts that he's got to go the mile.
No, I don't think so either. He may have, what does he have, 5 for the other race or something?
Something like that, yeah.
And they're all good. But they're all just, he just sees them all sprinters right now, so that's
interesting.
He must really see them as sprinters, or you'd think he'd say, well, let me at least give a shot at a longer race with one of these horses, because I can't, all of them can't win. But no, last report I saw as well, that he had nothing, aimed at this race either.
Well, and of course, he only has the one. He's run several, but he just has the one win, which was with Hootenanny. Going back at Santa Anita, actually, and you would think,
right.
I mean, given the quickness of that course historically, you would think if you were going to try a stretch out, this is the place to do it.
Maybe he doesn't want to get in the way of Coolmore with.
That's fair. That's a fair, fair point.
And no name never.
Well, there are some domestic players that have got to be brought up, and Chad Brown, Structor kind of emerged for Chad. There's going to be a talking horse in Vitology, who was running late at Cassie. Peace Achieved. Vitology is undoubtedly the trip darling going into this. Yeah, yeah,
I think so too. The Pilgrim. Mentioned Structor, he won, and Andesite was second. I think they're both aimed this way. That has been not been a productive race for the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf, historically speaking. And I wonder if that might not happen again. I mean, those horses are fine. I don't know. I'm not sure. I would probably prefer Decorated Invader, who was in New York to start. Was at Saratoga and then won the summer at Woodbine. I think he's pretty good. He's done a lot of different things, and he's got some pace, but he's a big, strong horse who may be physically mature. He's not just speedy with a tiny little burst. I think he's got a lot going for him. And then Vitology, he ran, 3 races, 2 races overseas for Joseph O'Brien. he was fourth in the Acom Stakes at York, which is a good barometer for American racing. It's a fairly flat, left-handed course. It's got a much longer straightaway than anything in North America. But he ran a pretty good race there, and then finished really strongly. Decorated Invader in the summer, I think, and a pretty strong race there, you know. And then switched to Brendan Walsh and ran in the Bourbon, and he was completely undone by the draw. He had post 14. He had to drop back to last. He lost ground on the turn. And meanwhile, the winner, Piece of Cheese, you know, and give him credit for being able to get himself in position. He was at the front the whole time and got a very favorable trip of his own making again. But he just held on. I mean, Vitology didn't, you know, second by a neck, but there's no question he ran, like, overall the stronger race between the two, but, you know, ends with a Z. That's what shows up on the form. I think Piece of Cheese is fine. He's been kind of an overachiever, I kind of feel like, but he's run a bunch of good races. It's just this horse, you know, he's shown a lot in these two North American starts, and maybe, you know, maybe he doesn't have to fall quite so far behind. He could be more of like a stalking type. We'll just see where he draws and how he gets out of the gate. But, I mean, he's a very live horse in my opinion, although, like, if you stacked up his double trip in the Bourbon with the way Arizona ran in the Dewhurst, you'd have to think Arizona overall ran the stronger race and has much more pace to stay out of trouble and stay in position. Vitology is, I think, quite interesting.
I'll give you another horse that I think is going to end up being a big price in here that I assume is going, and that's Dan Blacker with his first Santa Anita Stake winner, hit the road. The More Than Ready colt, bred by Fred Hertrick. What's wrong with him?
Well, nothing. I mean, he looks good being inferior competition is the only thing. I loved his race in the Zuma Beach, which, of course, is not in a hotbed of Breeders' Cup juvenile turf talent through the years. It's one of the lesser, quote-unquote, preps, which is $100,000 stakes race in Santa Anita. But, you know, it was a race for him to run in. He had, you know, was off a maiden when he was supposed to run at Del Mar in a stakes race and just coughed the morning of the race. I talked to Mr. Blacker a couple weeks ago about this horse. He coughed the morning of the race. He was never even sick. He just, you know, he had, like, one bad day, I completed the one time, had to be scratched. They waited for Zuma Beach. I mean, he really caught the eye. I thought the way he ran in that race, not just the end of it, but the middle of it. His move around the turn to get into position was very striking. He travels really strongly. And then for a two-year-old, you know, making this his third start, to do the two-move thing, get in position, and then finish it off as well as he did, I thought was quite encouraging. I think you could imagine him having some upside. He's going to need it because he's stepping way up in class. But he's a good horse, I think.
I would agree. And just looking at the previous, some of the previous names, I'm just trying to figure out if anybody, Daddy DT was based out there when he was third to Hootenanny. Who else that looks like they were local? No, that's
not Cornet.
No, well, Cornet was Cornet of a Baron. Might have been.
No, that was an overseas horse.
Was he okay? Oscar Performance, of course, but came from was Eastern based. Good Samaritan was Mott. Air Force behind Hit It a Bomb, Cassie. All right. So just one. There's just one West Coast based that snuck into the try. Daddy DT,
yeah.
who then lived out his days.
I don't know why it works out that way, but it generally does. That those are not horses that are especially competitive. But I agree with you. I do like this horse, way more than the average sort of horse coming out of that race.
Couple of other names. Is Amador Sanchez going forward with Graceful Kitten?
Well, last I heard, he was.
Okay.
That was the, he's definitely been on the list. The Armed Forces winner. He'll bring a measure of pace to the event if he participates.
Graceful Kitten, bred by the Ramseys, and a very inexpensive OBS April purchase that has run off three straight wins and ran a pair of 79 buyers coming into this. There's some, you know, a handful of fringe players. Is Blaine Wright and Anneau d'Or? Is Blaine Wright?
Again, last I saw, he was on the list as well.
Okay.
The Golden Gate maiden win.
Yes.
He won 8 legs. He was 6-5. It's a $480,000 medallion euro out of Walk Close by Tappet. The horse is bred along the lines of a good horse, and he was utterly dominant, facing 9 rivals at Golden Gate on September 29th. I mean, who knows? It's really... The path to the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf is not typically run through one race at one day at Golden Gate Fields, but you never know.
A couple of other names. We were watching at Presque Isle a couple of weeks ago, Teresa Connolly with Cadet Connolly, but she ended up scratching, and I thought maybe she would do something at Woodbine, but no. Is she hoping to run?
Last I looked, that horse had not worked recently. I think something might have gone amiss. I don't have any reporting on that, but I don't know how well things are going there.
Well, and Rusty Arnold, two Calumet horses, right? Flapjack and Gear Jockey.
I have not heard much about Flapjack recently, but I wouldn't be surprised if Gear Jockey was trying to get in the race. But he's going to be in trouble, I think, because he's a maiden. But he did run pretty darn well at in the Bourbon. You know, he was short of room in the stretch, maybe like come close to brushing the rail, and was a very close third. And he's got a lot of upside, he's got some talent, but we'll see if he gets in. Just real quick, Cadet Connolly's last work was July 23rd, so he hasn't worked since the last race. I don't think he'd come to the Breeders' Cup that way, so he's probably out. Gear Jockey, you know, I mean, I don't know. He's run well enough that I could see, you know, being a little bit interested in him. He obviously has some talent, but again, I don't know if he's going to get into the race, even if they want to.
Well, Fighting CB from what is going to turn out to be a negative key race at Saratoga. Encoder. John Sadler, Encoder.
Jay Pridman in California reported in the Racing Form the other day that they were going to have, I think they're going to have first preference in the Juvenile Turf Sprint and second preference in this race.
Well, and I've got word from Jack Sisterson, hot off the press. No Flapjack and no Lexingtonian either for the sprint. They're going to bypass, and Jack is only sending Bandua to run in the turf.
In the turf off of the Shadwell Turf Mile.
How about that?
Okay. Well, you know. Owners can do what owners want to do.
Well, and to his credit, to Brad Kelly and team's credit, they love to run, and God bless them, frankly.
Well,
you know?
Okay, but I mean, I think Jack, I mean, I've talked to him a number of times this year. He's had horses racing on the circuits that I cover, and he strikes me as inquisitive, curious, dedicated, and capable. But, you know, I don't know. I'm not going to get into it now. I'll just say what I was going to say real quick. He was saying, you know, like, after, because the horse ran at Arlington, and he ran well in the million, and he ran well in the Arlington handicap at, you know, up to a mile and a quarter. And he was the trainer was, you know, straightforward in saying he's got a lot. He's like a good galloping horse. He's got a lot of pace. He stays on well. He tries really hard. He just gets kind of out quicked a little. So then he shows up, cut back to a mile. Well, I don't know. I just feel like maybe sometimes those horses aren't getting optimal management because of things that happen out, you know, higher up in the food chain. And I think Bandle is really a pretty interesting horse. He's developed a lot. He came here. He's very capable. They've done a good job, and it was everything went well. You're moving from Ireland. I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do. But it's a tough ask to go, you know, to stretch back out to the turf. But I do think he's probably better suited to a mile and a half considerably than a mile. Maybe the whole thing was like, oh, we're a little sharp in his speed, run him at a mile, and then stretch him back out. Maybe this is all a master plan, and he's going to pay $58 to win in the turf. Then they're going to tell me that I don't know anything about managing their horses.
Well, the answers are coming hot and fast. Encoder is only going to try to get into the sprint, into the juvenile sprint.
Okay. Wow. You had a pipeline to the cup office.
we got first. We got Jack Sisterson, and this one coming from Derek Lawson, who is always informative and Johnny on the spot.
Awesome.
Well, and there it is, Marcus. This was tremendous. We covered a lot of ground. I'll ask you the same question I asked Brad Free. Beside the races that you're covering, what are you looking forward to the most?
I'm looking forward to seeing how Probable messes up his own trip in the dirt mile.
I saw your tweet yesterday.
I'm just kidding. The sprint is really fabulous, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, it's crazy. And especially because it's become something of an afterthought or its presence
well,
in the event.
We've had weak divisions generally a lot of the time.
Yeah.
You know?
I know.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that race. That's going to be, I think that's maybe the race of the weekend.
That's what everybody is saying. Jay Privman is
saying.
Well,
then I got to say something different. Let me think a little hard. Hold on. Give me a second. I'm out of ideas.
By the way, Flavian Pratt will be riding Hit the Road for Dan Blacker.
Oh, awesome. Good choice. Great jockey. Hey, well, you know, one other thing worth mentioning is that this juvenile turf idea, I mean,
yeah.
Everyone likes to knock organizations and often for decent reasons, but that seems to have been a pretty good addition, hasn't it? I mean, the way I see the field coming up, there's a huge amount of interest. I mean, I know some people don't like turf sprints. I've actually come to like them just fine. And that filled a niche, you know? I mean, I don't know how much it would cannibalize from the juvenile turf, you know? And there's a lot of interest, and there are some pretty exciting horses in that race. So, you know, well done. Adding that to the menu, I think it was a good addition.
I completely agree. And at the time, I would say that all of the juvenile turf category has been, you know, not just a nice addition to the 2 days. And I'll be frank, when it came out, when the concept of the juvenile turf and the juvenile filly turf came out, I know that I was critical initially. You know, thinking that my thinking was that this is just a pandering to, you know, the international set. But what transpired, what has happened since 2007, is that the trickle down effect has been enormous.
And I agree totally.
It's amazing because because everybody loves to pan anything that American racing does, but yet. The racing offices across the country, they reacted and utilized, you know, races in some cases that were extra dirt races, turning them into turf races for juveniles. They created programs that built, you know, backwards from these races. It's created frankly, a wider interest and opportunity for stallions that are turf bent. It's been very, very positive for everything that it's touched, and it doesn't get enough credit.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely on board with that take for sure. A lot of people, I think for good reason, are more comfortable running their younger 2-year-olds long on turf and dirt. There's just more of them that can do it, and I think it's less difficult, less demanding of them when you maybe don't want to push a good horse too hard that early. I think that I think it makes a lot of sense a lot of ways, and I totally agree. I mean, the division races leading up to this race in the division generally have large competitive fields. I mean, the Bourbon, which I covered, you know, it was an excellent field, good from a wagering standpoint, an exciting race, and that it's not alone. I mean, the summer is always an interesting race, and yeah, it's good. It's been a positive development, something that we don't say that often these days.
Well, this was a positive development over the course of the Tuesday at the races get together. Marcus, when are you traveling?
I'm departing Saturday afternoon for the Arcadia and Environs. Looking forward to it. Really looking forward to it. It's always so exciting to see all this collection of amazing horses gathered together under one roof and just watching them train during the morning, even after, you know, being at the event for a number of years. It's exciting for me, and it's fun. It should be a great couple days racing. Knock on wood.
I concur completely, and I also travel Saturday afternoon, so I will see you Sunday morning, Clocker's Corner.
You bet.
DRF Hirsch, everybody, and that leaves us with only Steve Anderson to fill in the last couple of blanks, the Juvenile Fillies turf and the turf itself. Which got a surprise addition in Bandua this morning. Thanks to Jack Sisterson for his update, and add one, subtract two for Jack. And we also got a little help from Derek Lawson, which we appreciate. Let's take a break. Probably our last of the morning. I went way longer with Marcus than I ever expected. And we still have to get to Bill Downs. And I'm worried that John White, this is going to become a running gag now. We may end up having to hold John till Wednesday. But actually, that might not be bad, because the announcement tomorrow, 11:30, the pre-entries. So maybe John, and I think it's actually the Monday that John has been on with us for regular announcement. I can't remember. Well, because they moved it around a couple different times. It's been different hours. All right, we'll take a quick break. Casey says, let's just take a short break. It's a deal. We'll come back. Bill Downs, Indiana Grand, as their season can see the finish line, joins us next. Jeremy Plonk. Talk a little Keeneland with Jeremy as well. And they get a nice card next few days. Really good money allowance tomorrow. Crazy. A stake level allowance tomorrow. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Play the Empire 6 at Belmont Park, featuring daily payouts and a carryover jackpot. Best of all, it only takes 20 cents to take down the Empire. One unique winning ticket earns the entire net pool plus the jackpot carryover. Without a unique ticket, 75% is distributed to winners, with 25% added to the jackpot. The Empire 6 consists of the final six races each race day at Belmont Park, and the next jackpot carryover mandatory payout is Sunday, October 27th. Learn more at nyra.com/Empire6. The Empire 6, play small and win big.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Fletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow, what other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.